This is Jacinda Sanguera, and you're listening to Light on Conspiracies.
I'm convinced that it is one of the most unjust wars that has ever been fought in the history of the world.
Welcome back to Light on Conspiracies, the second part for subscribers only.
I'm here with my dear friend Shush from the Apache Nation, and in the first hour we were going through the differences between different cultures, the way we talk, the way we speak, the way we interact and so on, and how easily it can be misunderstood that things in Western culture can be experienced as rude from the Apache side and maybe the other way around as well. In this second hour, I would very much like to go into a bit more of the history around very specific individuals like Cochise and Geronimo, and then bring it into the current situation in the reservation, because this very beautiful tribe and nation are being challenged with monstrous challenges and facing horrific stuff that we have to stop. We have to take part of ending this misery. So, Shush, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today. I'm learning a lot, and I'm very much enjoying our conversation. But could you get us back in history a bit into the surroundings of these individuals I mentioned here, like Cochise and Geronimo, and then bring it forward?
Yes, Cochise and Geronimo were both people that were known in the time of the great conflict with the Western societies. And this belief that we are such a vicious people is really a misinterpretation, a characterization that was fabricated for the purpose of public support against our people. And clearly it was for one purpose. It was to remove us from the land. So this was not a process that was very easy. It was not negotiated, and it was absolutely by force. So at this point in time, after this period, we had already went through 100 years or more of war. And so at this stage, the people are very tired. They're overwhelmed with the number of people coming into the country, and they are outgunned, literally, with the fact that the hardware and the force that was placed upon them was by far not nowhere near equal. Using cannons against a people that are unarmed was devastating. And so this happened down at Apache Pass, and it forced Cochise into a corner that he had to create a treaty, the Howard-Cochise Treaty, which never, by the way, was ratified by Congress, and by deceit was destroyed. Even Cochise's son, Taze, was lost in Washington. It was said that he had pneumonia, but we later found out through a number of different ways and means that he was killed in Washington. He was tied to a bed. This is during the fall, the winter months, and they opened the window and they tossed water on him, and he froze to death. There was no sciences to discover these things back then, and he is to this day buried in a national cemetery somewhere near Washington, D.C. And so our people are spread out all over the country because of these conflicts. And, of course, we are known primarily by this character, Geronimo. And I first must respectfully submit that I will speak this person's name, but it's done in respect. It's also done in a way of educating the world. I in no way have any ill intent or meanings, nor do I harbor any ill intent or feelings towards our people or the rest of the world, and even the United States. This is a point of history that should be understood, and I'm repeating it for the young people in the world that will learn of our culture and our history. And there should be some objectivity in this, so I will remain as much as I can neutral. I cannot speak for a man that lived far beyond me in time, nor can I speak for that period of time with absolute perfection. I don't know of anyone who can. I believe that the people, the descendants of the people around these personalities would be appropriate in time in the future that they are also contacted, engaged, and their perspective shared through a number of experiences and perceptions, not just my own, but the total of all those that are willing to speak on the subject. That is the connotation. That is the understanding that the world should adopt. And why? You need to hear it directly from the people. You need to hear it directly from who is affected. It shouldn't be accepted that a story is written about another group of people, and that is fact, and that is what happened to us. So Geronimo displays a very great passion for his people. He was violated. He was violated many, many times to the point that, well, we know him for the conduct, what took place. What I'll point out is that it took another Apache to catch an Apache, and Geronimo was never overtaken. He was never conquered. He was never captured. He chose to go ahead and submit himself. And it was only after a great prolonged period of war with, I can't even describe the loss when I think about it in that way. There's so much pain. There's so much treachery that there's no way I can understand what this man endured. Several families he lost, several families. His first family, and as he spoke, his intimately, his mother, his wife, his children were massacred. And then again and again. And so through these deceptions, this treachery, he developed a forceful outward look. Even though there's no word for hatred, that doesn't mean that people will fall to this level. And I can say that this is an act of desperation, an act of sacrificing himself for his people, and basically going to the level of exerting every power, every skill, every aspect of who he was as a person. And in the end, he even came to that point of accepting, well, if freedom is not possible, then he will give his heart and the attention to confinement. And so he subjected himself, he gave himself, he turned himself in. Upon his incarceration, it was absolutely, I don't think anything that we can imagine. I traveled to Fort Sill. I've been to the place where they kept him. I've seen the cell where he was chained with a leg chain to the center of the room. And I walked in the path that he walked. There is a pole worn in the floor of the prison cell where he walked. And this is stone. I can only imagine what kind of force and what kind of repetitive impact that he had to have to make such a very clear mark. He left his path in the stone. I had to protect myself before I would approach such things, and in our way, it's a shield, so that we are not affected by such very strong, influential powers, essences that are there. And so I prayed for myself, I cared for myself in a way that I could approach the subject. And even then, I was overwhelmed with the emotion of being there, but feeling the presence and the power of the people was remarkable. Fort Sill is a place for many of our people. These were prisoners of war. They're the longest held prisoners of war in the world. 27 years that they were confined up in Fort Sill. Some of the people returned, but Geronimo never did. He ultimately perished on the Fort Sill reservation where many other Chiricahuas were. He was a farmer at the end, but in the end, he was walking home and had pneumonia and had somehow fallen down. And so they found him later, compromised by the weather. A very, very great man, a very dignified man, but a man who had to sacrifice himself for his people. He was fighting for freedom. He was fighting for our existence. And he turned into a machine in the end. I don't think that, in my own personal belief, that his heart was so broken, his heart was so filled with sorrow, that he could feel as a person anymore. And it's unfortunate. I could never imagine walking in his shoes. nor could I ever fully explain the circumstance that took place, but this man has definitely set in history an impression, much of which, unfortunately, we won't hear about until we hear from the others. These are the families that descend, the families that actually were surrounding Geronimo. What most people don't understand is Geronimo was not a medicine man. All of the Apaches understand medicine. All the Apaches understand power. Each individual has their own character traits and their qualities. So there was a medicine man that traveled with Geronimo, how we say carried the medicine, and his name was Harold Dick. The great-grandson of Harold Dick still survives and lives this day, and he's in New Mexico, and hopefully in the future you'll be able to communicate with that family. Also, they're descendants of Geronimo. What most people didn't know is that he had numerous families. And Geronimo is not the only name. It's not. This is only the name that history knows. It's in Apache, the meaning of that is he who yawns, or one that yawns. And even there, there's different understandings of what his name means depending on which region you are of the Apaches. And I'll add to that, there's even elders in New Mexico and other locations that have described him as having not only that name, but many names. Many Apaches took different personality namesakes on and were known at various times as different people. And so this was a very clear tactic and a strategy of the Apache people, the Ndebele people, the original. And it was very useful, especially during a time of war. So not everyone keeps this one name, is born with it, and then departs with it, especially this person, Geronimo. So it's only during this war period that he was given this name, during this time of his recognition. But he was also known as different names throughout the Apacheria. And this is something that we maintain as a internal history. For instance, in my great-great-grandmother's camp, he would come here. And it was known that the traveling through the reservation boundaries was porous at the time. So people were coming and going. And people were also providing support and supply lines to these, what were called renegades back then. The renegade was the one that didn't accept the reservation. They didn't accept the boundary. If an Ndebele or an Apache person, what was known as to the government Apache, people left the reservation, that was a death warrant. It was absolutely a confinement camp by race, and it was created for the specific purpose, of course, to imprison us. So Geronimo didn't agree with this. There was not a fence around the reservation. We're talking about millions and millions of acres. And at the time, people didn't know this. They were tattooing our people. There was not the names that you would think. If you go back and you look at the original rolls, the registry for the people here, some people had names that were numbers. Some people had names that were just letters. And they couldn't have a very skilled control over society like they do possibly in Europe, when a family name and a surname and birth certificates and all this verification existed. It didn't exist here. And so the only way to do this and to keep a control was to tattoo people's arms or on their body. And so my own family had these tattoos. They couldn't explain it to us. This is so horrific, the history, that it was distorted. Later, we went back and we found out this is the reality. This is what happened. And they did this distortion to protect us. The negativity was not wanted to be carried on, so they didn't repeat it. And in some cases, we don't have a perception of how hard it was, because that part of it was kept from us. And in a sense, it's a way of trauma, preventing trauma from being passed on. Did trauma get passed on? Absolutely. Genocide is felt 5 generations after the fact. I'm suffering from these genocidal post-traumatic stresses that were passed on to me from my family. So it's unavoidable, but there was care, you know, that the next generations won't have to deal with this. This is our work today with the Agent Orange. So didn't mean to exasperate it, but this is the understanding of, the limited understanding of what we have of Geronimo. What we do know is that he inspired a group of people that supported him, We do know that he overcame thousands in the military. They put 5,000 men against Geronimo and a small group of people, and they could do nothing. He ran them through the desert. He ran them up one side and down another, and basically disseminated the military that tried to overcome him. And only when they paid another Apache, this is Peaches and others, the scouts from White Mountain, who went down into Mexico and located the Apache stronghold in the mountains there in the Sierra Madre. So this is the history that is understood here. He is known also for having numerous families. So as they killed off his family, he did have relationships that were extensive both in the Apacheria in the United States and in the Apacheria in Mexico. And I just earlier mentioned that two of his great-granddaughters did appear here in San Carlos. They provided us with documentation. They gave us the family tree. And there is a huge family of Geronimos that is out there. Again, from both sides. There are some of the children that are known here in the United States. And now that the family has come forward, we have the books. And I'll send you some pictures so that you can see the family chart that they've created. And this is what I know of the man and his experience and his impact that he's left on the world.
I just want to repeat there that there were 5,000 soldiers, that was like one-fourth of the American army, were chasing 39 Apaches for more than 6 months without being able to take them. I mean, that is just unreal. And then the only way to capture them was by using Apache from his own family or close friends and so on. And then the way they rewarded these people that managed to find Geronimo and managed to persuade him to surrender or to give up, they put them on the trains to Florida as well. I mean, it is so despicable. It is so horrendous when you think of it. That also, I think not many are aware of also that these reservations, they started out, some of them, as areas that were acceptable with mountains, with rivers, with nature and all of these things. But then once that was done, then it moved on to the next one, to the next one. And in the end, it was in the worst areas where you are living now in San Carlos. I mean, that is not, you can't do anything hardly there. And then not even that was okay, but then being shipped off with families and families separated where the children were sent off to Pennsylvania and put into Western schools and so on. Many of these children never to be reunited with the families. And it's just awful, awful. My heart is... Well, I can't say, but it's reaching out for you, Shash, and I really want to do whatever I can to change this situation. It's enough now. The suffering is enough.
I can't agree with you more. The children and what you're speaking of are very actual depictions of our history. Many, many of our children were stolen. Not only were they taken to Carlisle, this is the school in Pennsylvania, for re-education, reassignment. Meaning that they cut your hair, they take your language. All of our people endured such a suffrage. Everyone here was beaten, was raped, was abused. We have stories of children that were beaten with barbed wire here on the reservation by missionary schools to stop them from speaking their language. When they would be in Carlisle, they would be punished so severely to the point of death. The graves that are at Carlisle are so numerous. How can so many children die? How can so many children die in one place? This was a torture chamber, if you can imagine, to strip the culture, to program these children into an English and Western way of thinking, modeling. And they forced this not only on one generation, on every generation till this day. It's still going on. The children that have been taken from this reservation have been spread amongst the whole world. They're in Europe, they're in Africa, they're all over the place. And I need to say this, you know, Fort Sill is where the camp was finally created after they returned from Florida. when the people that were used to go after Geronimo and Geronimo was returned, these are the scouts. The scouts went with the Chiricahuas that were captured. The first scouts, and how these days this happened, is they created the camp. And there was no food. There was, they took away all horses. They took away all the guns. They only gave back the guns and the horses to the scouts that would agree to work with the military. And so this first deception of enticing some of our people to work with the military force started. These people eventually became the tribal councils, the governments of who we have today. Actually, the descendants of the scouts are who are running the tribal governance. And people out in the world think, well, we're represented. No, we are still have proxy governments that are forced upon us. They are financed, paid for, manipulated, and controlled directly out of Washington. We have no representation except for this nation that's rising. Now, of course, this is completely ours, but the tribal councils have no authority to act outside of federal government policy. They are indeed federal agents. So the families that were are still in power, and these are the scouts that were bribed. They were provided more food than the rest of the people. The rest of the people starved. There are people today that are starving on this reservation. I myself have endured some very critical points in my life that it's so difficult to survive this condition of a prison camp to this day. And not just what happened during the war, but what has happened since then is an ongoing devastation of a culture. It's ongoing genocide. Just the fact of how our history is depicted and what little is known speaks of this. This policy must end. There is no other country in this planet that identifies people by blood, by making us show who we are with a card. There's no such thing as a Polish card or a Russian card or an African card or a Chinese card. Well, why is there an American Indian card? And why do we need to be identified by a race? There's only one race. It's called humanity. And this is something that is a confusing matter. To this day, it's a hypocrisy. How can it exist? How can every man be equal, but only the Indian is not?
Mm. Can you explain the reservation the way it is today and how life, what life looks like for you living there?
Sure, and I like the way that you depicted that there was land put aside that was somewhat enjoyable, but they changed it. It's like, well, here's your cookie, but hold on, let me take a half a cookie. And then before you put it in your mouth, let me take your half cookie and I break it half again. And oh, before you even taste it, let me, please, here's a tiny piece, now you can taste it. The reservation that originally was created was from the New Mexico border, almost down to Phoenix, a big portion of the state. And it included the high waters, the mountains, the valleys, and then into the desert. In San Carlos, the original camp was called Camp Apache, and it included White Mountain. It was White Mountain Reservation, San Carlos, and then a big swath of southeastern Arizona. As they discovered copper, they reduced the reservation numerous times. I believe up to 8 times the land base was reduced. And so the big copper mines of Morenci, the Globe Miami Copper District, the Ray Mine, the mines down in Mammoth, these are the huge underground mines north of Tucson and south of our land. Because of those mineral deposits, they cut the lands down, down, down. Now it's just a jagged little piece. They separated San Carlos and White Mountain. White Mountain is all the mountainous areas where the water is at. From the Black River south, this is where the deserts began, a plateau and then a desert. We were put in possibly the hottest place in the area. Yuma is only the equivalent over by California. But we were put in such an undesirable location that is exactly what you said. There's very little we could do here. We don't mine the earth, so we don't take out of the earth in such a manner of complete devastation. And there's not the land to farm. All the flat lands, the good lands, the irrigatable lands, all of those were taken from us. The farmers, cotton farmers, Mormons moved in, and they supported the mining communities. So it was a collaboration between cattle owners, ranchers, farmers and miners that reduced our land down to little to nothing. What we have left is very difficult to work with, and it's also poisoned. So this poisoning only started from the 1940s, around this time period. It was the German scientists of chemical weaponry, where they perfected Agent Blue to kill the rice plants in Vietnam, and perfected the rainbow herbicide known as Agent Orange, what we know today as Monsanto's Roundup. These companies originally placed themselves and located for the geological mineral resources back in the Midwest. And these resources are three natural occurring stones that when they combined them, they created a chemistry, they created chlorine. And so chlorine is the base, Clorox, the bleach. Clorox is the base formula for all chemistry. And that includes the pesticides, the herbicides, much of the solvents. This chemistry that comes from salt is what has been spread around the world and is now becoming a huge, huge issue. So again, the Apache people, the Ndebele, rise to the occasion and to address these subjects. To get back to the point, the reservation now and where it began are two wholly different things. We are now reduced to not only the worst economical circumstance with a piece of land you can't develop because the mineral wealth is not there, not that that was ever a choice, but there's no farming, there's no chance for ranching, there's no chance for all of these things. And it was by design. Not only did the reservation become reduced, all the waters are needed to mine the copper. So as these agreements were made, the tribal governments have circumvented our future. They essentially leased and sold off all the water around us to the point of dropping our water table, to the point where this community in Peridot District, they go without water every summer. Why? Is because the tribal government oversold the water and all the aquifers dropped. They are now below our well level. And so we now run out of water because we bit our nose off, not thinking of ourselves for our own use. And it's motivated all by financial gain of this small group of criminals called the tribal government.
You know, you said before that an Apache would treat a homeless with the same respect as the president. I think the homeless deserves a lot more respect than people in government. Because, I mean, when you look at what your people have suffered, the other nations and so on in other countries, part of the world and so on, I mean, we're looking at super, super, super criminals with no conscience whatsoever, no compassion, no emotions, no empathy for other living beings. And this is why I try to aim the light into the darkest of the dark, into the belly of the beast, to let the truth expose what is going on. Because this needs to change. This is not okay.
You're going to the root of the matter by hitting the fact that it's all a conquest for indigenous resources. And we need to change the model. We really need to change the model. All humans are equal. There's one race of humanity. That's the message.
So how do people survive in these reservations? I would call them concentration camps more than reservation.
They are truly concentration camps. Well, for the most part, when I say most part, when you look at the numbers, the economy is government. So 20% of this reservation eats because of the sacrifice or the compromise of the tribal government. Only the tribal government and their families eat. The rest of the people suffer. I see suffrage. I see people starving. I see people going out without hot water, without cooling, without heating, without proper living conditions. It's deplorable. We have a circumstance where Apaches now neglect other Apaches. That's the modern form. And I absolutely disagree with all of that. That is not in death. That's not even Apache. These people have left who they are. They've adopted a Western society and accepted it fully, not only in consciousness, but in theology, philosophy, and conduct. Once they have done this, even though they are a bloodline, they are no longer part of the in-death. They have left the people, and they are now part of Western society. So we don't look at some people as our own. We see some of our own have completely gone. They're completely gone. It's a Stockholm syndrome. And there are people that love the circumstance the way that it is, but it is completely irrational. It is unfair. And it is inhumane to treat people in such a manner. So there is great suffrage on this reservation. We have the highest levels of cancer in this whole country, and no one knows about it. 95% of the kids have attention deficit disorder in White Mountain. 90% have learning disabilities here in San Carlos. No one addresses that. No one. There's no effort to seek the cause. There's no intervention. There's no treatment. I'm told that they're given Ritalin, and the children, this lady was crying. She told me the children lay on the floor of the school because that's all they can do. They're so drugged up, and they have to drug them because they're overactive. They're not paying attention. They don't learn. I've had testimony of families here, again, crying. Their children can't talk. They're 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. They can't speak Apache. They can't speak English. They can't talk at all. Talk to teachers, and they've given testimony that children want to know why they can't learn in school. They understand what has happened. They understand that there's something that's not right. They want to know what's going on. There is not one politician or tribal council leader who will ever address the issue. They act as if it's something that they're unaware of, and they deflect any kind of question, and they're true politicians. They should go run for the United States government is what they should do, because it's true to form. It's nothing but a lie. When we get to a point where in society we've lost faith in our governance, then it's a turning point. And I think that it's not just the Apaches. It's now the people of the American society. It's people in the world societies that are realizing these institutions have been morally corrupt. They're fully infiltrated with corruption to the point where when you know you're being lied to your face, then that's the time that it's time to change, to do something. And I can't provide the answer. I could say that the answers are within each society, and the answers are within ourselves. We certainly know what to do here, and that's why the Apache Nation is reemerging.
I tell you, the answer is always in the heart. The heart knows. If you follow the heart will tell you what is right and what is wrong. And there are definitely extreme things that has been made against you that is so, so wrong. I know that as incredible as it sounds, the area has even been sprayed with Agent Orange. Is that true?
Yes, I mentioned Agent Orange. And forgive me for, you know, letting out these things, but it's part of where we are today. Agent Orange is this herbicide. It was created to kill plants. It wasn't created originally to kill plants. It was created along with the other weaponry of gases like mustard gas, sarin, all of these terrible concoctions that were created out of chemistry. So these are chemical compounds that are called pesticides. They're classified as such under the federal government, but covertly, they are weaponry that were developed under the Department of Defense. It was a case between a government entity and a contractor of a chemical company, Dow Chemical, and others, who collaborated and worked to develop agents of chemicals that were used in war theaters. And so this was used as a weaponry in the Asian theater against Vietnam to kill off the food crops. But there was not so much care that only the crops were killed. It was absolutely known that these agents caused problems in genetics, caused problems in the environment, and they absolutely are killers. They may not kill like, for instance, the cyanide pills that they drop in when they execute somebody. It's not that lethal where it'll kill you instantly, but it's a prolonged, exasperated, painful death where when you spray a plant and you see it wither and dry and die, and then it just collapses down to the ground, this is what the same thing happens to humans. When you watch the plant die, you're watching your children, you're watching your family die as well. Because that we have a system that rids toxins and we have an ability to prolong life, the human body has more resilience than a plant form, but essentially is dealing with the same toxin, and eventually the humans are dying too. You know, when you're ill, because you don't die at that moment and fall over and you're dead, doesn't mean you're dead. We are the walking dead. I am the walking dead. Why am I saying that? Because I am fully toxified. I have dioxin in my body. There's no way to remove that. The result of that is going to be cancer. It's going to be other illnesses like heart disease, thyroid, diabetes, a myriad of diseases. Why? It attacks the immune system. It's like having HIV. It's an immune deficiency that eventually the body and its ability to defend itself is so depleted that you are overcome by one disease or another. And so you die a horrific slow death. And it attacks every system. It attacks the nervous system. It deforms the genome. These are compounds that are known as mutagenic. They are called POP. They're persistent organic pollutants. They're low energy compounds that are very close and mimic estrogen hormones. The body accepts them into the chemistry as a hormone. And so what we've experienced here is a super genesis of a super estrogen hormone chemical that has altered our genetics. It feminizes males. It creates a very masculine type female. And in some cases, there's one person, and there was a good doctor, and there was another person that came up, and they said, it's not impossible that humans are born without sexual organs. It happens here and here. And I just stared at him, and it's like, is that supposed to be normal? When my brother and I looked and did the research, I'm sorry to laugh about this, because if I don't, it will make you go nuts. The person that was born here was born without a sexual organ. They both have the male and the female connotation. In one instance, it's a female, and one another, it's a male. And so she looks, the person is feminine, but when speaking, it's a male, masculine. And this is a genetic deformation. The person was born without organs. And this is not anything that we found in any medical journal. Despite these few people who believe it's okay, I don't think so. It's just not in humanity's genetics for such things, mutations, to occur. It's absolutely attributed to the chemical warfare that was done to our people, our nation. So not only is this the testing ground, these are the headwaters of Arizona. This includes the White Mountain Reservation and San Carlos. We have the largest, and what we're finding out is the largest chemical dumps in the country. If you open a map and you look at where Nitro and some of these other towns in the Midwest are, where Dow Chemical was originally located, and it's still there to this day, we're between the chemical companies, manufacturing facilities, and the theater, the war theater. Most all of the chemical was shipped out through the Navy. It all went through Western ports into the Asian theater. After they outlawed it for only in the military and only for its use in society, but not here, all of those containers, the inventory of Agent Orange that was in the country came back to San Carlos. It was quietly disposed of. It was buried in huge, huge dump sites. One was uncovered, it was 20 barrels deep, and it still continued to go down. A stack of 55-gallon drums that was 20 high, and it continued to go down. They didn't find the bottom. They didn't find the extent of how far out the dump was. We do know that there was huge, huge excavation sites where three-story buildings could fit in. This is adjacent to the airstrip with the Forestry Department. And we're talking about areas that are the size of football fields, numerous. I would say maybe 10 football fields in dimension. And so there are people that are part of the programs then that witnessed it. There are people that witnessed the excavations. There are whole buildings that these are the warehouses where the drums were stored. They tore down the buildings and they had to bury the buildings. You can actually see aerial photographs on Google Maps of San Carlos where these buried pits are, and they are scorched earth. Nothing grows above them. It's a very toxified circumstance in San Carlos. These dumps were placed in proximity to the community. They're north and up elevation from San Carlos. They absolutely have compromised our water aquifer. It's to an extent that we don't understand. We don't know how much is here. There are no documentations. Through efforts through Freedom of Information Act and others, with the help of veterans, with the help of military personnel and government who are leaking these informations back to us, we're starting to put together the bigger picture. Our lake is fully contaminated. There are barrels that are in the lake and the bottom of the lake. I became contaminated when we found barrels below our dam. This is on the Gila River. Ranchers reported to us about tens of barrels that were strewn in the river that were all leaking chemicals. They went across with their horses to chase cattle. They came back across, and as they crossed the river, they got off their horses, they pulled their boots off. All the skin on their feet fell off. It was burned off. This man's daughter, there's three daughters he has, are kids up in White Mountain. Now they're suffering corn acne. They can't wear shoes. They have to, they're very sensitive. They can only wear moccasins and things like cotton. No plastics, no anything that is chemical is they become overly sensitive to. That's just one case. I went up that river. I've become contaminated. I have corn acne. I have a grapefruit-sized rash on my leg, and it's been there for 2 years. Not that large. Just recently, in this last year, it kind of blew up because of probably additional exposure. There's an Agent Orange barrel behind the Bilas Clinic that we had identified by EPA. I was at that location. I'm sure I received more contamination. I grew up less than 100 yards or about 100 yards away from where that barrel was. And not only that barrel, there was a whole warehouse. When I was 16, I saw drums of barrels that were stored here. And my grandparents warned me about not going there, but I did anyway. I drove by with my bike and I drove right in front of the open doors and I could see how many drums were in there. The whole facility was full of them. So I grew up around this circumstance, and it's taken me my whole life to do the research, the investigation, and then the discovery of what exactly had taken place at San Carlos. It's nothing short of human testing on community, where you have a community that has a perfect gene pool. It's pristine. It's genetically and also socially segregated from the rest of society. It's a perfect test place to test Agent Orange, to test chemicals. So pesticides, herbicides, and a myriad of things. I grew up defending my children from the hospital because every year, every month, they would have some new vaccine. They wanted to give a pig vaccine to our kids. They wanted to sterilize my wife, my ex-wife now. It's just an abuse after abuse after abuse, to the point where I won't even go in there because they know that this is a laboratory. I'm not a guinea pig, but they treat us like this. And so San Carlos is the test place. This is the guinea pig farm of how the herbicide Agent Orange, and now what you know as Roundup, Monsanto's Roundup, what that is. It came from here. We should have stopped it, and we didn't. We couldn't stop it because we were prisoners of war, and we were prisoners to our own people, the ones that sold us out.
I'm getting a massive headache.
I'm sorry.
No. Not like that. Shush. If in a perfect world, what would be the perfect solution out of this? What would be a way out of this, the way you see it?
I don't see litigation as a solution. Here's why. If we litigated today and we won, we would be short-sighted in that because we don't understand the degree of damage I'm not sure if we will for the decades to come. It needs to be understood and researched and examined. What I can say is we have absolutely a failure of trust, a failure of management, a failure of responsibility and relationship between the indebted people and the federal government. It requires a renegotiation of our status. So myself and others, myself, I made a self-declaration. I'm removing myself out from the Indian Act policy. I will no longer be a property of the United States government based on the failure of trust, because these are federal trust lands held in trust for Indians. It's not federal land. Many people think, oh, okay, a reservation, the Indians own the land. No, we don't have title to the land. The title is held by the U.S. government in trust for the Indian. Well, who is it held for? For the Indian. Well, when? How about now? When can an Indian speak for himself? Now. When he has been circumvented, overcome, cheated, and poisoned. So in short, the trust was that they held and managed this property because we don't know how to do it ourselves for us until the time that we do. That's today. And that trust has been broken, a violation. Why? They poisoned our land, they poisoned our people, they poisoned me. At that point, we depart. So we thwart it. It's not an ask, it's not a permission, it's not a requisition, it's not a form, it's not a process. It's a deviation. It's saying stop here, and now we're going to look at it differently. So we emerge as a nation, and we make our claim to Aboriginal title to the property. And so what we see as a solution is that, one, we clean up the land, because San Carlos and White Mountain are the headwaters to Arizona's drinking waters. The fact of the matter is, those barrels, they're all in the dumps. They leaked into the aquifer. That aquifer not only poisoned us, it kept traveling. And where does it go? Everything goes to the ocean. Everything. Surface water and subsurface waters. Now I'm going to give you the bigger picture. Most of the Agent Orange that was tested was upon our people. They put it in our food. They came into our yards. They sprayed all the fruit trees. There was elders that were begging them not to spray the trees. Don't spray the fruit crops. This is the food crop of our people. This is the mesquite bean. The mesquite trees. And I'm not just talking about peaches and pomegranates and plums. I'm talking about all trees. These are the trees that they provide us our staple foods, the oak nut, the oak tree. Those are contaminated. These are the trees that gave us our flours, our mills, like our wheat, like you would consider wheat and rye. There's a mesquite bean. We mill this bean into a flour. Mesquite flour is it's a healthy compound. It's not only an antibacterium, it helps the body process sugar. Actually, today, mesquite bean flour is a very good supplement for people with diabetes, because it helps their body process the sugars and pass through the body without ill effect. All of these are poison. So when they applied the Agent Orange, they defoliated the range. They defoliated the range, and this is the thinking, to get more water runoff so that water would run down and they could use it for agriculture. Well, when they sprayed it with these poisons, they poisoned the water. Most of the chemical was put into the waterway. They sprayed the banks of the rivers, just like they did in Vietnam, but they poured millions and millions of gallons into the waterway. They were dumping 55-gallon drums into the rivers. All of that went downstream. It contaminated the lake. It contaminated the river. EPA recently did a cleanup in Gila River, Salt River community. This is down in Phoenix. They said they tested the soil and along the banks of the Gila River, and what they found was a chemical cocktail. They had no idea where it came from. And so when he came here, I said, well, you're standing at where its source is. This is the headwaters. It originated from here. It's the mining contamination from the copper mines. It's the mercury, the cadmium, the heavy metals. It's the runoff from the agriculture, because flood irrigation was the methodology. They took the aqueduct system from our people. All of that was here before they arrived. And so they did flood irrigation. They sprayed the chemicals into the field, and it drained back into the river. The pesticides that were used to grow corn, and it's not corn they grow cotton. They grow cotton in the desert, a water, very high water requiring plant in the desert. And so they sprayed these crops, and effectively all that came to San Carlos and went downriver. And then they sprayed it with Agent Orange. See, if you can imagine, you have dioxins, you have PCBs, you have all of these various chemistries that were tested because they were testing on agricultural crops from the beginning of the United States up till today, because the Forest Service is still using Roundup. All of this drains into where? The Gila River and the Salt River, or sorry, the Black River, which eventually becomes the Salt River. So there's two drainages, one from White Mountain and San Carlos, Black River, and it goes into the drinking water of Phoenix. It's the reservoirs of Roosevelt Lake, Apache Canyon Lake, and there are other native communities down south of us. I want to mention them too because they're part of this. And then the Gila River. The Gila River's San Carlos Lake comes from Safford. It originates in the foothills of Silver City in New Mexico. It's at the headwaters of this river is where Geronimo was born. And so this river runs from New Mexico all the way into Arizona, past San Carlos, down into Phoenix, and then into the Gulf of Sea of Cortez. So in Phoenix, the community of Salt River and Gila River have 99% diabetes rate. They have the highest diabetes rate in the world. And they were telling us it's from McDonald's and Burger King and, you know, convenience. Well, Iroquois Confederacy, Navajo Nation, myself, I've had Taco Bell and Big Macs all of my life. Nobody at Navajo Nation, as a population, there's not 99% diabetes. There's not 99% diabetes with Haudenosaunee. And they've been eating Big Macs since Columbus landed. And so the point is, is that it's an absurdity. It's very clear that these people were poisoned by the chemicals of the river that they lived by. It's airborne, it's in the soil, it's in the food. Fort McDowell has the same problem. There are Apaches that are mixed on that reservation with other groups. They are poisoned. Phoenix is poisoned. Arizona now has the highest cancer rate in the whole country. It used to be only Gila County. It used to only be around the reservation. Now it's Arizona. Well, what we're seeing, and when I ask the modelers in the biochemistry arena, these are the experts in this field, I asked, well, how far do you think this dioxin has traveled? They said at least several hundred miles. So if you look at a map and you measure from San Carlos down to the Sea of Cortez, you'll find that it's within that range. What we know in the last two decades is that the Sea of Cortez is dying. No one knows why. It's dying at the top, from the very top down. People in mainstream society, they look at a map and they see the surface groundwaters and they think that's it. No, it's not. They're called aquifers. The largest aquifer in the United States, the Ogallala Aquifer, where that water originates from is Canada. So the biochemist that we're involved in working with is from Canada. Their family is involved with water testing and treatments. They specifically understand contamination. What they also understand is the water hydrology. And so these Canadian glacial waters is what makes up the lakes, the Great Lakes. It's what feeds the plains of America with the great water supply. That's all glacial waters from Canada that are traveling south. They also travel underground in the Ogallala Aquifer that drains into two of the oceans, which are the Sea of Cortez and the Gulf of Mexico. They're fed in through underground aquifers. It's quite well known that the Sea of Cortez has a fresh water supply, even though the Colorado River has dried up. The Colorado River Basin and the Arizona drainage basins all drain agricultural areas, and so the Sea of Cortez has received the results of the mining, the agriculture, the pesticides, and all the herbicides, and it's created a chemical cocktail that now resides at the bottom of the Sea of Cortez. And why it's there is the saline content is so much higher than the natural seawater that it sits below like a lake underneath the sea, an ocean. When they tested it, it's a very toxic, high saline, but also high nitrate concentration. You'll find that the result of many of these products not only is toxified chemicals, but the main compound that is the runoff as a residue are nitrates. And so it's not coincidence that this is happening. It's common sense. that what goes downriver will end up in the ocean. The people that know this are oceanographers. They're the environmentalists that have always told us, whatever you put down your drain, whatever you put out in the waterways will end up in the oceans. And I think they have the most holistic viewpoint of conservation and environmentalism are the oceanographers. They understand how the world works. Even the plastic bag that blows across your land will ultimately end up in a water source, will ultimately end up in the ocean. And this is where all these microparticles of plastic and such are causing such a big problem. So, in Arizona, what happened in San Carlos and on the Apache reservations happened to Arizona, happened to New Mexico, happened to Texas and California. It happened to all Americans. It also happened to much of northern Mexico. We contaminated northern Mexico, and we contaminated the world. Until this story comes out, there will be not an awareness of how dangerous these chemicals are. They are still in our everyday household, which you can buy in Walmart, which you can buy in your local hardware store, and we're sending out an alert. Be very, very careful. Be very careful because what is labeled as safe is not. Be very careful and be very conscious of chemicals and chemistry. Go out there and do your research. Before you buy a product, before you use a product, consider the consequences. Before you approach using these things, do some research and go and look at the chemical composition. Look at the active ingredients. Look at what these are. Research the consequences. All of this information is available. I find it shocking that medical doctors today don't have a comprehension of the chemistry, the periodic table, and consequences of what these chemistries do and are on the people and the environment. I think that all of us as humans should raise our consciousness and educate ourselves in areas that it may not be our field of expertise, but it certainly does have something to do with the greater connectedness that we're all connected and that we're all part of Earth. With that premise alone, we should be more responsible with the knowledge that we have, that it shouldn't be limited to the expert fields that we have, that we should take extra care to learn into the extenuating, who we're connected to, how does it impact the next, and how can we become a whole human again, and how can we restore the one race of humanity called the human being, mankind. And that's the message I think that's coming out of San Carlos. Don't let this happen again. And shame on us. We should have spoke sooner.
Well, I think shame on all of us that have allowed this to happen, consciously or unconsciously. Shush, we come to the end of the second hour. I would very much like to give you a standing invitation. Anything you want to get out there, I would be most happy to help you spread the information to as large an audience as possible as well. But please tell us, what can we do? What can the listeners do? How can we support you and people in your situation? And how can they contact you? How can they reach out if they want to help?
You can support us by first, let's all start to become responsible. Let's look at our own actions and our own conduct. And let's start with ourselves. Where you can, let us all have more consciousness. Let us think about the consequences for our decisions and our actions. If you are going to purchase a bug spray or a plant spray, please, I beg of you, consider the natural alternatives. Consider natural compounds that are complementary to Earth. There are natural solutions to almost everything that we will encounter, including the toothpaste that we use every morning. Go for the natural compounds. That's the first thing we can do. Secondly, besides respecting each other, ourselves, and the environment, respect the plants, the animals, and the stones, all in the same context. If we can look at these environments as ourselves, we will walk upon this earth with a different footprint. We will learn to walk lighter because we understand we're walking on ourselves. Thirdly, if you can help, if there is something that can be done outside of not taking away from your family, not taking away from your community or your nation, because those are great responsibilities. We're all teachers. We can all teach each other. And besides that, if you're able to help here, well, then reach out. We always see it as an exchange. Just seek the Apache Nation. I can't really say there's any one spot. You can look at San Carlos. But seek the original, the traditional, seek the real entity of the Apache Nation and assist where you can. Sometimes it's just moral foundation and support. Sometimes it's what I can do in mentioning a good word in your name. Sometimes it's just a gesture. Sometimes it's the smallest things that make the biggest difference. In that way, we can help each other. I will certainly share more, and I would hope that what we can do is help people become more enlightened and understand themselves, people around them, and the earth itself. And I think if we become conscious people, that's the most we can do right now in this world, this age. It's with our decision. It's how we use our decision. It's what we choose to purchase and buy. If we all control that, we would all have a better place to live in tomorrow.
So with that said, I want to say again, you have a standing invitation. I hope this will be one of many conversations we have that will help to this situation. And the awareness of your people and other in different parts of the world that are experiencing similar situations, even yours is very extreme. But could we end this, since you don't have the word for goodbye, what would be an Apache way of ending a conversation except for just ending it? Boof.
We will see each other again. Until next time, may peace be with you.
And how do you say that in an Apache?
Ashant Gojan. It's in a good way and giving thanks. And that's what I can say. Ashant Gojan.
In that case, I say Ashant Gojan to you.
Thank you so much for listening to Light on Conspiracies, the place where truth and love transcend the darkness. Take care and see you soon.
May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who heard us, be filled with peace and joy and love and light. Victory to that light.